Good morning, Cedar Ridge. I am so happy and excited to be with you all here today. I know most of you all know me really well and have known me for many years. But for those that don't know me, once again, my name is Johannes Ford. If you've been coming for a while and I don't look that familiar, it's probably because I spend almost all of my time with the youth over in the barn. So, as Matthew said, today we're going to be talking about the Black Panther. There are a number of reasons why I wanted to talk about the Black Panther. The first was I was so surprised that it wasn't in last year's God in the Movies, considering how important of a film it was culturally, and how big of a film it was. Like, it was this really huge phenomenon. So I was surprised, and I guess I'm actually a bit lucky that it wasn't taken last year so that I could share it with you all this year. Another one of the reasons that I wanted to talk about the Black Panther was to convince some of my high school graduates that the Black Panther isn't overrated. It is an amazing film, and I'm not sure it could be rated high enough. Another reason that I wanted to share the Black Panther is because I think this film has a couple subtle and not so subtle messages which really connect with our church's vision on community. A community where everyone is accepted and respected, and their journey cherished, regardless of their backgrounds, belief, or place in society, where everyone looks out for the concerns of others and no one is alone. I've got to admit now that I actually miss the main two messages in the Black Panther that I'm going to be sharing today. In fact, it was a couple of youths that brought this to my attention. I'd like to thank Aaliyah Bird and Will Mather for providing me with a couple of excellent starting talking points. I really do appreciate the insight that they've provided me. So we're going to jump right into the film. We're going to start with the story of Wakanda, which is a fictional sub-Saharan African country with tremendous wealth and technology. Because of this fictional material named Vibranium.
Baba?
Yes, my son?
Tell me a story.
Which one?
The story of home.
Millions of years ago, a meteorite made of vibranium, the strongest substance in the universe, struck the continent of Africa, affecting the plant life around it. And when the time of men came, five tribes settled on it and called it Wakanda. The tribes lived in constant war with each other until a warrior shaman received a vision from the panther goddess Bast, who led him to the heart-shaped herb, a plant that granted him superhuman strength, speed, and instincts. The warrior became king and the first Black Panther, the protector of Wakanda. Four tribes agreed to live under the king's rule, but the Jabari tribe isolated themselves in the mountains. The Wakandans used vibranium to develop technology more advanced than any other nation. But as Wakanda thrived, the world around it descended further into chaos. Vibranium safe, the Wakandans vowed to hide in plain sight, keeping the truth of their power from the outside world.
And we still hide, Baba?
Yes.
Why?
So, I wanted to show this clip for a couple of reasons. It shows the origin story of Wakanda, and because it leaves us with a question. Over the years here at Cedar Ridge, I've learned a tremendous amount. During my time here as a youth, I learned a lot about love and how to love. As a youth group leader, I've learned a lot about patience and commitment and how to lead a good discussion. When I was in the Greenbelt small group for years, I learned a lot about community. And here in the service, I've learned a lot about God and self-transformation and the importance of story. And this idea of faith and the importance of story resonates with me for a number of reasons. The first of which is just because I love stories. I consume stories at a really significant rate. I love reading and listening to fiction, mostly science fiction and fantasy. But I also love the stories that are seen in today's TV shows and movies. And I'm sure that I'm not the only one. In fact, can we get a show of hands? Can you keep your hand up and raise your hand if in the last week you've read a book? Wow. Or watched a TV show and keep them up? Or watched a movie and just enjoyed the story? Wow, that's like literally everyone, right? There's something about stories that fill us with a sense of wonder. They just wow us. There's something special about them that makes us want to share them with others. So the second reason that this idea of faith and story resonates with me is because I think that God loves stories, right? The Old Testament can be viewed, in fact, the whole Bible can be viewed as this one long story of God's relationship and interaction with humanity. That long story itself actually being broken up into like hundreds of little smaller, shorter stories. So in the New Testament, we also see the power of stories by the volume of stories that Jesus tells. Jesus told lots of stories, the most powerful of which are likely the parables. And we did a series on parables last year, and I'm actually going to relate a couple of parables to a couple of messages in today's service. If you're familiar with the Black Panther and you've seen it, there's like a little pamphlet that you can follow along with the message that was handed out today. And maybe you can write on it one or two parables which you think I might connect with the Black Panther. So I've also got to say that I mostly consume stories for entertainment purposes. But recently, I've discovered that the real power and wisdom in stories comes from like little nuggets of truth that we can only really access if we're paying attention and if we're asking questions. Questions is, and the importance of questions is another lesson I learned here at Cedar Ridge. I think the power of questions can be seen in the way that Jesus interacts with questions. Jesus asks questions to teach. He asks questions to get people to think. He asks questions to engage people in conversation. Jesus asks questions like, can any of you, by worrying, add a single moment to your lifespan? But who do you say that I am? Why are you thinking such things in your hearts? Would you like to get well? Over and over again in the Bible, I'm fascinated by the stories and parables that are told, and the questions which often precede and follow them. I really like that this opening scene in the Black Panther mirrors that relationship of story by showing us the origin of Wakanda and then leaving us with this quintessential and all-important question. Okay, we're going to continue now with our next clip and introduce a couple of the main characters of the film.
My prince, coming up on them now.
I can handle this alone.
I will get Nakia out as quickly as possible. Just don't freeze when you see her.
What are you talking about? I never freeze.
What's going on?
That car. What's that? The car not start.
What happened? The engine. How was it? What is it, Captain?
Defense position. Defense position.
Are we under attack?
Defense position.
Nzu, they run to the side. Defense positions.
Yeah, defense positions.
No games.
I will shoot. Wallahi, I will shoot her right.
He froze. Why are you here? You should ruin my mission.
My father is dead, Nakia. He will be crowned king tomorrow. And I wish for you to be there.
Yourselves home now and take the boy. Yes. Get him to his people. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes.
Thank you.
You speak nothing of this day.
Yes. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
Nakia, my prince, we are home.
its order.
Mother, princess, my comfort for your loss.
Thank you, Nakia. It is so good to have you back with us.
Take her to the river province to prepare her for the ceremony.
Yes, General.
Did he freeze?
Like an antelope in headlights.
Are you finished?
So, in this scene, we're introduced to T'Challa, the movie's protagonist. But I think, more importantly, we're introduced to Ciri, Nakia, and Okoye. Three women who play central roles in Wakanda and this film's success. Ciri is the technological genius of Wakanda. Nakia is the River Tribe's top warrior, and she's a spy. And Okoye leads an army of women soldiers. She's their general. I really like how in the beginning of this clip, Nakia and Okoye are just shown as being such bosses, right? Like, they both take out armed militants. Nakia does it completely unarmed. I think if I was her, I would have stayed in that van. I think that it's really cool to see these women in these really powerful roles. I like how the beginning of this clip plays on gender roles a bit, right? Like, it plays on this gender stereotype and shows us that Nakia isn't being rescued as a damsel in distress. Like, she's quite powerful and has agency on her own. And I think this powerful representation of women isn't shown enough in many of our modern-day stories, and that this portrayal of women is really important for us to see and recognize. I know that the Bible doesn't necessarily give women the agency that we would prefer in many modern-day stories, but for its time, it was really progressive. And if we can, I'd like to focus on a few of the ways that the Bible has been actually more progressive than many of the stories that we see in our modern-day books and TV shows and movies. Particularly, I think the Bible does a better job of many of these modern-day stories of showing women with agency and power. And it's easier for me to see that in the Bible. Specifically in the Old Testament, there are numerous women with agency, like Deborah, who was a judge and a prophet, and Esther, who was a queen and saved her people from systematic destruction. And then there's Mary Magdalene in the New Testament that's actually mentioned more often than many of Jesus' apostles. I feel that this exclusion of women with agency in our modern day service really does us a disservice, our society, our faiths, and our lives. I think strong representation of women matters in our stories, and I think it's important to see people of all genders having agency in stories. And I think that would benefit our lives and our society and our faith. While we're on representation, It's really important for me to mention another reason that I feel like the Black Panther is such a great movie. And that's simply because it's such a black movie. And what I mean by that is that it's written and directed and scored and acted and produced by a predominantly black cast and crew. I know it's not news to many of you that today's stories and books and TV shows feature cast and crews and authors that are most often not people of color or women. In fact, I've got a couple of statistics from the UCLA Hollywood Diversity Report that shows, despite the fact that people of color make up more than 40% of the U.S. population, that they're very underrepresented as film leads, as film directors, and film writers. And the same is true for women, right? Women make up more than 50% of the world's population, more than 50% of the U.S.'s population. But, you know, we can see from these statistics that they are less than 31% of film leads, less than 7% of directors, and less than 15% of writers. I think this underrepresentation of women and people of color often leads to characters that lack depth, characters that are often just caricatures, or even worse, used to promote stereotypes. I really like how Black Panther pushes back on these stereotypes, right? The Black Panther is a story about an African country with tremendous wealth, advanced technology, savvy leadership, and women in power. And I think these details are a significant reason why the Black Panther is such a great movie, and also why the Black Panther did so well and was so successful, right? It's the fourth highest grossing domestic box office movie of all time. I also think the value of representation is seen in the Bible. We're going to look at a story, the Samaritan leper, a story which I might add, which is followed by, you know, this quintessential question. The story goes, "Now, on his way to Jerusalem, Jesus traveled along the border between Samaria and Galilee. As he was going into a village, 10 men who had leprosy met him. They stood at a distance and called out in a loud voice, 'Jesus, Master, have pity on us.' When he saw them, he said, 'Go, show yourself to the priest.' And as they went, they were cleansed. One of them, when he saw he was healed, came back, praising God in a loud voice. He threw himself at Jesus' feet and thanked him, and he was a Samaritan. Jesus asked, 'Were not all 10 cleansed? Where are the other 9? Has no one returned to give praise to God except for this foreigner?'" The Samaritan leper story is powerful precisely because it features a Samaritan who's seen as uncleansed or unclean and ethnically despised. And the Samaritan's the only one who's appropriately grateful for the miracle Jesus performed. I think this story shows us that the dominant culture has a lot to learn from those which are often overlooked. After Jesus' death and resurrection, we also see that it's two women who are the first to witness the miracle of Jesus' resurrection. And in the New Testament, we also see that Jesus often sought to befriend those that were overlooked, like the sick and tax collectors and women. I think these biblical outcasts are seen in really unexpected but pivotal roles. Pivotal because they are unexpected in many ways. And I think that these stories should serve as stark reminders to us that we should seek to understand those in our community which are unrepresented. When preparing this talk, I ran into a quote by a social worker friend of Mr. Rogers that goes, "Frankly, there isn't anyone you couldn't learn to love once you've heard their story." I believe this statement is true, and I think the truth in it is seen in the diversity in characters we see in the Bible. Diversity in story is like an opportunity to walk a mile in someone else's shoes. It's a way of getting outside of ourselves and understanding people and culture and perspectives that are different from our own. Claudia Hammond, in a BBC article titled, "Does Reading Fiction Make Us Better People?" put it this way. Characters hook us into stories. Without necessarily even noticing, we imagine what it's like to be them and compare their reactions to situations with how we responded in the past or imagine we might in the future. I've got a lot more ideas about how and why representation of people of color, of women, really matters in stories. But I think we want to jump back into the movie, and we're going to go on to our second to last clip.
He killed his own brother and left a child behind with nothing. What kind of king? What kind of man does that?
No man is perfect. Not even your father.
I didn't even give him a proper burial. My uncle Njobu betrayed us, but my father, he may have created something even worse.
Hey, look at me. You can't let your father's mistakes define who you are. You get to decide what kind of king you are going to be.
Brother, you need to get here now.
Eric Stevens. Graduated Annapolis, age 19, MIT for grad school. Joined the SEALs and went straight to Afghanistan, where he wrapped up confirmed kills like it was a video game. Started calling him Killmonger. He joined a JSOC ghost unit. Now, these guys are serious. They will drop off the grid so they can commit assassinations and take down governments.
Did he reveal anything about his identity?
He has a war dog tattoo, but we have no record of him.
Is this man Wakandan or not? Theta, speak. Standing in your house, serving justice to a man who stole your vibranium and murdered your people. Justice your king couldn't deliver.
I don't care that you brought Claw. Only reason I don't kill you while you stand is because I know who you are. Now what do you want?
I want the throne.
Hey, you, the tuna.
Y'all sitting up here comfortable. Must feel good. It's about 2 billion people all over the world that looks like us. But their lives are a lot harder. Wakanda has the tools to liberate them all.
And what tools are those?
Vibranium. Your weapons.
Our weapons will not be used to wage war on the world. It is not our way to be judge, jury, and executioner for people who are not our own.
Not your own. But didn't life start right here on this continent? So ain't all people your people?
I am not king of all people. I am king of Wakanda. And it is my responsibility to make sure our people are safe and that vibranium does not fall into the hands of a person like you.
Son, we have entertained the charlatan for too long. Reject his request.
Oh, I ain't requesting nothing. Ask who I am.
You're Eric Stevens. An American black operative. A mercenary nicknamed Killmonger. That's who you are.
That's not my name, princess. Ask me, king.
No. ask me. Take him away.
Ungubani, indingu injidaka. Unyanagan Jobu.
Huh? Unyanagan Jobu.
I found my daddy with panther claws in his chest. You ain't the son of a king, you are the son of a murderer.
Uyabosisa! Lies!
I'm afraid not, Queen Mother.
What? You? Indanda Togan Jobu.
Hey, Auntie.
I'm exercising my blood right. The challenge for the mantles of King and Black Panther.
Do not do this, T'Challa.
As the son of Prince Njobu, he is within his rights.
He has no rights here. The challenge will take weeks to prepare.
Weeks? I don't need weeks. The whole country ain't gotta be there. I just need him and somebody to get me out of these chains.
What do you know of this?
I accept your challenge.
So in this clip, we're introduced to Killmonger, the Black Panther's antagonist, and T'Challa's cousin. This scene is the beginning of the end of an elaborate plan by Killmonger to ascend to the throne of Wakanda and change Wakanda's long-standing principles on how they use their resources. At its heart, The Black Panther is a story about two cousins with conflicting ideas about who their people are and how their community should use their resources. This idea of who are my people was actually brought to me by Will Mather, and I'd like to shout him out here for that. I appreciate it. Traditionally, Wakanda has thought of their people as just the five tribes of Wakanda. We saw that in the opening scene. Killmonger has a much broader definition, though, of who his people are. This difference leads to a civil war in Wakanda with T'Challa and Killmonger on opposing sides. This question of who are my people actually parallels a question Jesus was asked by an expert in the law. Right? Who is my neighbor? And I think Jesus' reply to this question is telling. It's telling to the importance of story. Right? Jesus responds, of course, with the parable, or Jesus responds, of course, with the parable of the Good Samaritan, a parable that features diversity at its core, and a parable which ends in this quintessential and all-important question. Which of these three do you think was a neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of the robber? The answer, of course, being the hated Samaritan, leads our faith to a pretty broad definition of who our neighbors are. A definition that's quite different from Wakanda's traditional definition of who their neighbors are. A definition that's kept Wakanda isolated from the rest of the world. Oddly, our faith's definition is more aligned with Killmonger's definition for who our people are. But I don't think there are actually many new ideas in The Black Panther about the question of who are our neighbors. What I love about this question, though, is that it is discussed in a central part of this film, a film which many people, you know, write off as just a simple comic book movie. This is a really deep question, and I'm really excited to see it in this comic book movie. I'm going to leave a little bit of this conflict and how it plays out for those of you who haven't seen the film yet, and move on to our very last clips.
When you said you would take me to California for the first time, I thought you meant Coachella or Disneyland. Why here?
This is where our father killed our uncle.
They're tearing it down. Good.
They are not tearing it down. I bought this building. And that building. And that one over there. This will be the first Wakandan International Outreach Center. Now Kia will oversee the social outreach. You will spearhead the science and information exchange.
You're kidding.
Eh?
If I were you guys.
Where you come from?
From Wakanda.
Wait, what is a Wakanda?
Hey, yo! Is this yours? Who are you?
My name is King T'Challa, son of King T'Chaka. I am the sovereign ruler of the nation of Wakanda. And for the first time in our history, we will be sharing our knowledge and resources with the outside world. Wakanda will no longer watch from the shadows. We cannot. We must not. We will work to be an example of how we as brothers and sisters on this earth should treat each other. Now more than ever, the illusions of division threaten our very existence. We all know the truth. More connects us than separates us. But in times of crisis, the wise build bridges, while the foolish build barriers. We must find a way to look after one another as if we were one single tribe.
We sold your respect, King T'Challa. What can a nation of farmers have to offer the rest of the world?
Right? What can the nation of farmers show the world? So in this clip, we see that instead of the traditional Wakandan approach of using their resources to protect and enrich themselves, and also instead of using their resources as Killmonger wanted to help the African diaspora wage war on their oppressors, Wakanda decides to use their resources instead to educate and help fund communities in need. These competing ideas of how to use Wakanda's resources was something that Aaliyah pointed out to me, and I want to thank her for that. After hearing Aaliyah's ideas on how Wakanda should use their resources, I thought about the fact that Jesus has a very similar message and lesson for us. And it comes from a parable. So we're going to read really quickly the parable of the lamp under a bushel. It reads, "No one lights a lamp, then hides it in a drawer. It's put on a lampstand, so those entering the room have light to see where they're going. Your eye is a lamp, lighting up your whole body. If you have a wide eye, if you live wide-eyed in wonder and belief, your body fills up with light. If you live squint-eyed in greed and distrust, your body is a dank cellar. Keep your eyes open, your lamp burning, so you don't get musty and murky. Keep your life as well lighted as your best lighted room." I actually draw two messages from this parable. The first coming in the beginning, which is so simply put that I find it a bit humorous, right? It says, no one lights a lamp and then hides it in a drawer. Like, duh, who would do that? It sounds like a great way to start a fire, right? I believe that we're all blessed with lessons on Jesus' love. And we're all blessed with different fruits of the Spirit and skills and abilities. And like this parable and the Black Panther suggest, we shouldn't use these resources or we shouldn't hide these resources. We should use them, and we should use them to help others. One thing that I feel like I've been blessed with is the appreciation and desire to work with young people. Sometimes I think it's hard to believe that I've actually been here at Cedar Ridge working with the youth for like 20 years off and on. And I've loved every moment of it. And not only have I loved it, but I've grown a lot from my time with the youth. I spoke earlier about just the increase in my levels of patience and lessons on commitment and leading small group discussions. Those are all skills that, you know, I got from my work with the youth. And when I talk about my work with the youth, I often tell people that I feel like many times that I've learned much more from them than they've actually learned from me. And that brings me to the second message that I see in this parable, which is that when we use our lights, our gifts, our abilities to help other people, we're also enriching ourselves. And what I'm trying to say is that not only should we use our resources to help others, but when we do so, it helps ourselves. Okay, I'd like to leave you all with one last thought. Two last thoughts, actually. Two questions. Those are, how can unconventional and diverse stories be an avenue for growth for me? And what is your vibranium, and how are you using it? Thank you.